Dietrich was running already down Church Hill, a winter cloak drawn around his shoulders. There may yet be another way. Tell Geschert to hold a white banner aloft, and when Max confronts you, hold out empty hands. I will meet you at the wooden bridge. And so it was that the shivering band of 20 Krenken, bundled in what hodgepodge of garments they could muster, and escorted by Max's trembling, round-eyed men, approached the lord of the Hochwald. The Herr Geschert, splendid in red sash and trousers and a yellow vest too thin for the weather, stepped forward and, at Dietrich's coaching, dropped to one knee with his shivering hands folded before him. Manfred, after the barest hesitation, enclosed those hands in his own, announcing to all who dared draw near, "This man we declare our vassal, to hold in fief the greater woods, and to produce for us charcoal and powder for the pots de fer, and to teach the arts of his foreign land to our men. In return, we grant him and his folk food and shelter, clothing and warmth, and the protection of our strong right arm." And so saying, he drew his long sword and held it before him, pommel up to resemble a cross. "This we swear before God and the familia of Hof Hochwald." Then Dietrich blessed the assembly and sprinkled them with the golden-handled aspergum. Those villagers touched by the water crossed themselves, staring wide-eyed at the monsters. Some of the Krenken, noting the gesture, repeated it, to appreciative murmurs from the crowd. Dietrich blessed God for moving the Krenken to thoughtless mimicry. He pressed the processional crucifix into the hands of Johann von Stern. "Lead us slowly to the church," Dietrich told him, "at a pace thus." And all set forth from the bridge and through the village to Church Hill. Dietrich followed the cross, and Manfred and Geschert followed him. "May the Lord help us," Manfred whispered for Dietrich's ear. The human heart finds comfort in ceremony. Manfred's impromptu words, Geschert's humble gesture, Dietrich's blessing, the procession and cross, tempered the dread in folk's breasts, so that for the most part the Krenken were met by stunned silence and gaping mouths. Men clutched sword-hilt or knife-handle, or fell to their knees in the snow, but none dared speak against what lord and pastor had so clearly countenanced. A few shrieks pierced the still cold air, and some clumped awkwardly through the snow in a parody of flight. Doors slammed, bars fell home. More would flee were flight easier, Dietrich thought, and prayed for snow. Block the roads, choke the pathways, keep this monstrous advent contained in the Hook Vault. When the Krenken caught sight of the wooden cathedral, they chittered and pointed and paused to raise photographic devices to capture images of the carvings. The procession bunched up short of the doors. Someone shouted, "They fear to enter!" Then another said, "Demons!" Manfred turned with his hand on his sword. "Get them inside, quickly," he said to Dietrich. While Dietrich chivied the Krenken into the church, he told Hans, "When they see a red lamp, they are to genuflect before it. Do you understand? Tell them." The stratagem worked. The villagers quieted once more when the creatures passed within and made obeisance to the true presence. Dietrich dared relax a little. Hans stood beside him with the cross. "I have explained," he said over the microphone. "When your overlord from the sky comes again, we may yet be saved. Do you know when this befalls?"
"Neither the day nor the hour."
"May he come soon," Hans said. "May he come soon." Dietrich, surprised by the evident fervor, could only agree. When villager and Krenk alike had crowded within the church, Dietrich ascended the pulpit and related all that had transpired since St. Sixtus' day. He described the stranger's plight in most piteous terms, and had the Krenkish children stand before the congregation with their mothers behind them. Hildegard Müller and Max Schweitzer bore witness to the injuries and deaths that had afflicted the creatures, and described how they had helped place their dead in special crypts aboard their ship. "When I sprinkled them with holy water at the bridge," Dietrich concluded, "they showed no discomfort, therefore they cannot be demons." The Hochwalders shifted and glanced at one another. Then Gregor asked, "Are they Turks?" Dietrich nearly laughed. "No, Gregor, they fare from a farther land than that. Joachim thrust his way forward. No, he cried for all to hear. They are true demons. A glance alone convinces. Their coming is a great trial for us, and how we answer it may be the saving of our souls. Dietrich gripped the pulpit rails, and Manfred, who occupied the sedalia usually reserved for the celebrant, growled, I have accepted this Kränkisch lord as my vassal. Do you gainsay me? But if Joachim heard, he gave no heed. Rather, he addressed the familia. Remember Job, he told them, and how God tested his faith, sending demons to torment him. Remember how God himself, robed in flesh, suffered all human afflictions, even death. Might he not then afflict demons as he afflicted Job and even his son? Dare we bind God with necessity and say that this work God cannot do? No! God has willed that these demons suffer the afflictions of the flesh. His voice dropped. But why? But why? This he said as if he pondered aloud, so that the assembly stilled to hear him. He does nothing without purpose, hidden though his purpose may be from us. He became flesh to save us from sin. He made these demons flesh to save them from sin. If angels fall, then demons may rise, and we are to be the instrument of their salvation. See how they have suffered at God's will, and pity them. Dietrich, having sucked in his breath, let it out in astonishment. Manfred took his hand from his sword. Show these beings what a Christian is, Joachim continued. Welcome them into your hearts, for they are cold. Give them bread, for they are hungry. Comfort them, for they are far from home. Thus inspired by our example, they will repent and be saved. Remember the great plea, Lord, when did we see you hungry? When did we see you naked? When? In our neighbor. And who is our neighbor? Any who may cross our path. Here he stabbed a finger directly at the mass of impassive Kränken standing on the gospel side of the nave. Imprisoned in flesh, they can wield no demonic powers. Christ is all-powerful. The goodness of Christ is all-powerful. It triumphs over every mean and petty and wicked thing. It triumphs over wickedness as old as Lucifer. Now we may see that it will triumph over hell itself. The congregation gasped, and even Dietrich felt a shiver run through him. Joachim continued to preach, but Dietrich listened no longer. Instead, he noted the rapt attention of the Hochwalders, heard the clicks of Hans and a few others as they repeated the talking head's translations. Dietrich was certain of neither the logic nor the orthodoxy of the monk's words, but their effectiveness he could not deny. When Joachim had finished, or perhaps only when he had paused, Manfred rose and announced for those who had not been at the bridge that the Kränkisch leader was henceforth the Baron Grosswald, and would live together with his ministeriales as a guest in the Hof, and that the remaining strangers would be billeted as his council would determine. This prospect caused much unease, until Klaus stepped forward and, hands on hips, invited the Meyer of the Pilgrims to guest with him. The offer startled Dietrich, but he supposed that his wife having tended their wounded, he could not appear behindhand in hospitality. After this, some opened their houses, while others muttered, "Better you than me." Manfred cautioned the Kränken about their collar. I understand that your code of honor demands swift corporal chastisement. Well and good. Other lands, other customs. But you must not handle my people so. The justice is mine alone, and to transgress it is to besmirch my honor. Should any of you transgress the laws and customs of the manor, you must answer in my court when it meets in the spring. Otherwise, Baron Grosswald will have the low justice among you according to your uses. Meanwhile, we want heralds to wear such head harnesses as the Kränken may provide, so that whenever there is need to speak one with another, the nearest herald may translate. In the silence that followed these announcements, Joachim began to sing, low at first, and then more strongly, lifting his chin and throwing words to the vices and rafters, as if transported by some inner fire. Dietrich recognized the hymn, Christus factus et pro nobis, and at the next phrase joined his own voice in duplum, at which Joachim faltered, then recovered. Dietrich took the holding voice, or tenor, and Joaquin the upper, and their voices moved freely against each other, Joaquin sometimes rendering a dozen notes to Dietrich's one. Dietrich became aware that the Krenken had stilled their chittering and stood as statues in their niches. Not a few of them held microphoni aloft to capture the sounds.